Good afternoon and welcome to KDVS on a Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock when you can enjoy everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. I speak, of course, of Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for stopping by this afternoon. My name is Dr. Randy, and I will be your host for this coming hour of talk, conversation, poetry, jazz music to interrupt the poetry and the conversation and the talk, and great guests. Our first guest this afternoon will be Melissa Morphew. She is a graduate of the University of Georgia PhD program in English and is the recipient of several national and international poetry prizes, including the Academy of American Poets College Prize and the Randall Jarrell International Poetry Prize. Well, just this week it's been announced that she has also won the Sacramento Poetry Center Manuscript Poetry Prize. Everyone in the area is very excited about this. We're all curious about Melissa Morphew. Therefore, I'm going to get her on the live line. We'll do an interview. She'll join us from Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. And I've been told, on good authority, that she has a Southern accent. So won't that be a treat? And then, in the second half hour of this program, we'll be joined by someone representing the world of technology rather than poetry, and that will be Chase McMichael. Chase McMichael is an expert on a great number of topics in the world of social media. For 15 years, he's been a senior-level product development and management experience development in consumer messaging and marketing technologies, including social media, advertising software, and collaboration. I'm going to get to meet him in a couple weeks at a conference that I'm attending in San Francisco on using email and other social media to get your message out. Chase McMichael will join us at about 5:40. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've picked a fine afternoon to join us here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and a fine day to think about poetry in the city of Davis. For on this very evening, at 8 o'clock, at Bistro 33, at 226 F Street, Danny Romero, Professor... I didn't hit the sneeze button in time. Professor of Writing and Literature at Sacramento City College, author of a great number of books, including books, a collection of poetry forthcoming from Bilingual Press. He will be giving a reading tonight at Bistro 33 of poetry and of a short story. He's a Sacramento-based poet, and I'm very pleased that he'll be coming to town tonight at 226 F Street starting at 8 o'clock. And after that, there is an open mic. So, we have a lot in store for you. You, the listener of this radio show on KDVS. And that show is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back with Melissa Morphew. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I'd like to thank very much the sponsor of this program, and that would be the Yolo Federal Credit Union. We'll be hearing more from them later on. And I'd also like to remind you that in the second half of the program, we'll be joined by Chase McMichael, who has worked at Oracle, Chase Manhattan Bank, and the Texas Center for Superconductivity. He holds a BS in physics from the University of Houston in Texas, where we are reaching our first guest this afternoon. I was very excited to hear via email this week that the winner of the 2010 Sacramento Poetry Center Manuscript Contest is Melissa Morphew for her manuscript Bluster, which our final judge, Indigo Moore, has just selected as the winner. Melissa Morphew is a graduate of the University of Georgia's PhD program in English. She's the recipient of several national and international poetry prizes, as I said at the start. In addition to those already listed, she has won the Cecil J. Hackney Literary Award in Poetry, the W.B. Yeats Society Poetry Prize, several Pushcart Prize nominations, and most recently, she has won, as we've just said, the Sacramento Poetry Center Manuscript Prize for 2010. Her chapbook, Hunger and Heat, The Missionary Letters, won the Anabiosis Press Chapbook Award and was subsequently published by Anabiosis Press in 1995. Her first full-length collection, The Garden Where All Loves End, won the La Jolla Poets Press National Poets Series Award, and as part of the award, received publication in 1997. In 2006, her full-length collection of poems, Fathom, was published by Turning Point Press. Reaching us from Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas, where she teaches English, I'd like to introduce all of you to our first guest this afternoon, Melissa Morphew. Melissa, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi. It's nice to be sort of in California via the telephone.
Absolutely. And I promised people that you would indeed on occasion speak with a southern accent. So if you want to overemphasize that at any point.
I was born in Tennessee and now I'm in Texas, so I'm afraid can't escape the southern accent. So it's there.
Well, that's fine. We quite enjoy it. Now, congratulations on winning the Sacramento Poetry Center Poetry Book Contest. And I was wondering, as someone who has won a number of contests, do you have to balance your creative right brain side with the left side of your brain, which pays attention to deadlines, contests around the country, matching manuscripts with the best audiences, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I guess I'm sort of lucky in that I'm a little obsessive compulsive.
Okay.
So I use contest deadlines as a way to make myself write.
Uh-huh.
So I say, oh, there's a contest. I will enter it. And then once I've decided to enter a contest, I just can't let up until I get some work finished and get it ready for the contest. So I actually use it as a way to make sure I keep being productive, because I find as a professor that if you're not careful, you let the teaching side of your life take over. And so that's a way to make sure, for me anyway, that I also give a lot of attention to the writing side of my life by having these deadlines and knowing they're there and saying, oh, I'm going to be productive and I'm going to get work done and I'm going to make sure that by such and such date I've got something ready so that I can enter this contest. So I find that it's a really good incentive, a really good way to kind of spur me on, because if I don't have deadlines, I'm real good at just pushing things to the back burner and concentrating more on, you know, whatever the mundane day-to-day life stuff is if I'm not careful and kind of saying, oh, well, I'll get that poem done later.
Right.
And that way with the deadline, it's, no, I've got to get that done. I've got to get that done. So that's how I do it, and it helps me a lot. I find it to be very, very helpful that way.
Well, I'm glad that inspiration and perspiration make a good mix for you so that you can continue to meet other people's deadlines as well as your own. Some people might think that poetry is an art whereby its practitioners have to wait for inspiration, and that therefore deadlines are luckily something that one needn't pay so much attention to.
Well, of course, inspiration is important, but the way I work, and especially the way I work on my own poems, in a way is more like how a novelist works. I sort of get an idea in my head for what I want to be a book, like an idea for a book. Bluster came about because I had this idea of I wanted something that had to do with the idea of weather and wind, but weather and wind, chaos in our lives.
Right.
So I started intentionally working on poems, and I started looking up books that had to do with weather and wind and reading things about that, and I started looking for images and various things that had to do with weather and wind and pulling things from my own life that I thought, well, this kind of goes with that, and working that way. Sometimes I work on historical themes, and I'll go, I'm working on some poems now that have to do with people who were considered curiosities during the 19th century. So I do a lot of research on that. So I find I sort of give myself inspiration by using various books and other things and notebooks and finding things to constantly keep myself inspired. Because, again, if I just sort of sat there and waited for it to, you know, bonk me on the head, I get real distracted very easily, and, you know, I might miss the bonk.
Right.
So I find that I need to constantly be looking for inspiration and be finding things that I find interesting. And by sort of thinking about, for me, books as almost like novels, that keeps me grounded and keeps me looking in certain areas. So I don't know if anybody else works that way, but I find it very helpful for me.
And obviously you've had a great deal of success. I'll remind folks just tuning in that this is KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis, Sacramento. And I'm interviewing this afternoon Melissa Morphew. She has just won the 2010 Sacramento Poetry Center Poetry Book Contest for the book that we've just been talking about, her manuscript, Bluster. And it was chosen by Indigo Moore, a poet who himself is an award-winning local poet and someone who's appeared on this radio show a number of times. We're reaching her this afternoon in Huntsville, Texas. So tell me a little bit more, Melissa Morphew, about how you got started in this business. I read at the start that you have a PhD in English.
Yes.
And some people go the creative route. Some people go the PhD scholarly route. But it sounds mm-hmm. like you have had success in both arenas.
Well, actually, as far as getting started, I wanted to be a poet since I was like 8.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to be a writer since I figured out that people wrote books. I've had a library card since I was 3. So it was the only thing I ever really wanted to do. But in a way, I sort of fell into this as far as the PhD goes. I'm first generation college, and I'm from a little small town in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee. And I got my 4-year degree in elementary education because that's what girls did.
Mm-hmm.
But I had wanted to write, and so I didn't particularly like being an elementary school teacher, so I went back to graduate school in English because some professors of mine kindly informed me that if you had good grades and you did well on the GRE, that you could get assistantships. And that was the first I even knew that I had a chance to go to graduate school. And so that's when I started. I got a master's degree with an emphasis in creative writing and did a creative thesis in poetry. And then those professors encouraged me to go on and do the PhD. And I just happened to go to Georgia at a time when they had just finalized a program where you could do a creative dissertation. So I was the first person at the University of Georgia allowed to write a book of poems for my PhD.
Good for you.
Yeah, so for me, it was just a series of teachers who encouraged me, and I got a chance to do it. And as far as, like, all I knew is I wanted to write, and I love to read, and I wanted to be a poet, and I just kind of, you know, I think it was karma or something. I just got to flow into this river. It's kind of that Joseph Campbell following your bliss, and so it happened. And I've been writing since a very young age. I've been working really, really hard on it, and I'm just happy that, gosh, I get to do this and actually for a living and encourage other people to read poetry and to write poetry and hopefully inspire my students to love poetry. And I can't imagine a nicer life.
Well, you certainly do sound very lucky, but also smart to continue to find where is it that a creative soul can find support. And when you can find it in a graduate program and in other institutions that will, in effect, pay you to share ideas and to read and to write, it really does seem a dream come true. And then we might say as well, a necessary one if we're mm-hmm. going to continue to foster creativity and encourage excellent literary output and discovery in the worlds of poetry and fiction and other creative arts.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I feel incredibly lucky, tremendously lucky. If it hadn't been for my teachers and my parents and all the people who have really, and I got to work for a year as assistant to the editors of the Georgia Review, and that was some of the most wonderful experience I've ever had and one of the best educations as a writer to get to work on the other side as an editor and to see what editors are looking for and, you know, the kinds of things they debate and talk over and discuss and to read the gigantic slush pile.
Right.
That was one of the best years of my life, and I wouldn't trade anything for it. I loved that year.
That's wonderful. We have another Davis-based poet who's been on the show a number of times, Doreen Jeanette, who mm-hmm. Has worked at the Georgia Review as well.
Oh, cool.
And she spoke similarly, glowingly about that experience.
Yeah.
So certainly a journal that listeners may want to check out for the quality of the poetry and writing as well as the quality of the people who work there.
Yeah.
Well, Melissa, we need to take a quick break and hear a public service announcement. But when we return, I'm hoping that I could ask you to read a poem or two to listeners of this radio show.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis, Sacramento.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. Quick reminder that Chase McMichael will be joining us this afternoon in about 20 minutes. Also, Danny Romero, the great Sacramento poet who teaches at Sacramento City College, will be giving a reading this evening at Bistro 33 as part of the ongoing Poetry Night reading series. I'll be at that event, and if you are hearing this for the first time and will join us for the first time, please introduce yourself to me, the man in the red Hawaiian shirt. This afternoon, we're enjoying a conversation with Melissa Morphew. She's just won the 2010 Sacramento Poetry Center Poetry Book Contest, and she's joining us from San Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She's the author of a number of books, chapbooks, and publications, almost all of which have won important prizes, and she's joining us on the live line this afternoon. So, Melissa, choose a poem, if you would, to share with us. Will it be one from your new prize-winning manuscript, Bluster?
Yeah, I'll read one from Bluster. Actually, this is a poem that's based out of my Appalachian roots, and I was raised in a religion called Primitive Baptist, which is very close to Puritanism. It stems all the way back to the 1600s, the Anabaptists.
Mm-hmm.
And people do shape note singing, and a lot of musicologists are collecting as many of the tunes as they can before the old people in my church die out, because these tunes date all the way back to the 1500s and 1600s.
Yeah.
So it's considered a folk religion. And when you're growing up in something, you don't realize, you know, that you're part of a folk tradition. I just thought, oh, this is where I go to church. And this poem is based on one of my experiences in church with a particular woman who was one of the members of our congregation, who I have always wanted to write a poem about, and then one finally managed to feel right. So this poem's called Communion. Everyone in the Hurricane Springs Primitive Baptist congregation knew, somewhere between the right hand of Christian love and fellowship and the final benediction, Sister Fanny Buckaloo would be endowed with the Spirit. As if on cue, her arms would shoot toward heaven, her hands waving, and she would sway, an awe-struck two-step, which under other circumstances might have been construed as the sin of dancing. Sister Fanny never spoke in tongues, but she'd shout a garbled amen or hallelujah, jarring decibels above the austere-shaped notes of Amazing Grace, the nasal off-key harmonies of her sisters, brethren, washed in the blood of the Lamb, most of whom found her display unseemly, wishing she had the decency to keep God's revelatory joy silently to herself. There were even those cruel enough to complain Sister Fanny only did it for attention. In the same way, she wore floor-length polyester gowns and wedding mint shades of pink or green, with billowing chiffon sleeves and sequin-stitched Nehru collars, a pet shop cockatiel outrageously conspicuous in a dusty barnyard of country crows. But I never doubted her sincerity. From my unobstructed angle in the back right corner pew, I noticed how, when Sister Fanny prayed, her lips moved as if she were kissing each word, as if she were keeping time with each ta-tump of her heart, saying, "Welcome, welcome, welcome, welcome."
Oh, that's wonderful. I like the repeated welcome at the end. I almost imagined that you'd stop at three instead of moving on to the fourth, because it reminded me of the Shanti Shanti at the end of The Wasteland, with the same rhythm and with an analogous message.
Well, you know, I kept switching it. I had three, I had four, I had three, I had four, I had three,
right.
I had four. And I finally decided, for some reason, the four felt more complete. That idea of the heartbeat and the heart beating, that
right.
That fourth one just felt more So I was telling my students yesterday that poets are the people who will put a comma in and take a comma out, and put a comma in and take a comma out, and put a comma in and take a comma out for days. And then I will send something to a publisher, and they'll reject it, and they'll come back, and I'll go, I knew I should have left that comma out.
Right. That's funny. Melissa Morphew is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. She's just won the big Sacramento Poetry Center manuscript contest, and she's won a great number of other contests in American poetry over the last several years, including the Academy of American Poets College Prize and the Randall Jarrell International Poetry Prize. Melissa, you've won prizes named after Randall Jarrell and W.B. Yeats. These are two of my favorite poets writing in English. It must be interesting and daunting to wake up in the morning and know that your name is associated with these literary greats.
Well, you know, the W.B. Yeats Prize, that was fun and wonderful, but the Randall Jarrell Prize was scary because when I actually went to accept that, and Mrs. Randall Jarrell was there.
Oh, wow.
And that was scary. That was very scary, meeting Mrs. Randall Jarrell and feeling you had to live up somehow to his presence in his poetry, and she's a tough cookie.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, but everybody was really nice, and she was really nice, and she patted my arm, and she said, well done.
Oh, wonderful.
So that was really cool. But
and sometimes,
you know,
it's an experience like that that will stick with you more than the prize itself, especially when you've won as many prizes as you have.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate this, gift that I have and have been given, and the opportunities that I've been given. And this thing about prizes, I mean, there's a certain amount of not just talent involved, but also luck. I tell people this all the time. I know that whenever, like, you've been a finalist for something, and you're in that top 10 or top 20, any of those deserve to win.
Right.
It's just a matter of, at that point, what really seems to be striking a chord with the judge. So all of those people, in essence, and all of the other people who were finalists for this prize, I know all of their books had to be wonderful. I mean, you know, it's not just that the one person had the most wonderful book. It's that they were all wonderful, but that something struck a chord with the judge at that point. But once you get there in a contest, you know, it's really, and it must be really tough for judges, you know, to be presented with this and to have to pick one.
Right.
And so I just hope that all people who maybe have been finalists for something and haven't won yet, that they just keep trying and keep trying. Because if you've gotten to the point where you're a finalist, that means you'll win. You just have to keep going.
That persistence is so important.
Yeah.
We should say what I'll assume, and you can tell me if I'm right, that you've probably entered poems and manuscripts in a great number of prizes and contests that you have not won.
Yes. Oh, I've been a finalist so many times in so many contests. I won't name them, but oh, yes. And gotten that disappointing letter of, sorry, we, you know, didn't pick yours after all.
Right.
Yeah. And I get rejected and I don't win way more than I get accepted and do win. But again, the more persistent you are and the more determined you are, the more likely it is to get something out into the world. And I had a professor in undergrad who said, it's not always the most talented writer in the room who makes it, quote unquote. It's usually the most persistent.
Yeah.
It's the one who just refuses to give up. And I think that's also not just about sending stuff out, but also about constantly working on your craft, continuing to stretch yourself and work to get better and better. Every time I manage to get a manuscript published, I set myself a goal for the next one. Okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to do something a little bit different to stretch myself. so that I keep growing and keep doing something that for me is a challenge and something that I know is going to, even if nobody else notices, is going to somehow or the other make me a slightly different poet than I've been and hopefully a slightly better poet. For instance, in Bluster, I wrote a lot more stuff based on personal experience than I've ever done before, and that was a challenge for me. So I just think that for me, that's something that I want to keep doing is hopefully live a really long life, not get Alzheimer's disease, and just keep being able to become a better writer.
And continue to draw upon those memories as well as on the sort of research that you've done, as we talked about earlier. Wonderful. Well, Melissa Morphew is joining me today on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stick around because Chase McMichael will be with us before long. But first, Melissa, let's hear another poem. Do you have one there that you can share with us?
Yeah. You know, we were talking about students and we were talking about learning. And I have this poem, and I'm just doing a couple of the ones because, again, I spent a lot of time many times doing things not based on my experience. But this particular poem grew out of a strange experience I had with a student where I was in Hastings working on something, and a student stopped by and said, could I give them a list of poems and poets to read? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I give them this list, and he just sat there. And he wouldn't go away, but he wouldn't say anything. And it was very awkward and strange, and I kept making, you know, the things, sounds and things you do, and shuffling things, hoping he'd get the message and go. And he wouldn't,
right.
And he just sat there, and he stared at me. And so finally he did leave, and then I started writing this poem. And it's called The Limits of Understanding.
Great.
The Limits of Understanding. The student asked her for a list, his eyes intense as an oncoming train. She thought he meant poetry and scribbled her customary hen scratch, Rimbaud, Baudelaire, Lorca, Catullus, Verlaine, writers apropos for the boy's voracious silence. She thought he'd thank her, walk away, but he just sat in the orange vinyl chair, gripping the yellow square of paper until she felt she'd misunderstood. Perhaps he wanted a list of stars, red giants, white dwarves catalogued by number, shimmering calendars which coordinate the temporal cartography of space, or something even simpler, last night's baseball scores, or a list of chores, how he must remember to make his bed, iron his clothes, take the garbage out each Wednesday. But she was not his mother, and she'd learned to resist those phantom instincts. We live in an age when touch is dangerous. But she'd already gone too far, and she knew it. The list she'd given him, those poet's words, would touch him in places so intimate they have no names. But somehow, he wanted more. There is no more, she wanted to tell him, but she didn't. She just let him stare, the way a house cat stares out a locked window, mesmerized by the flight of a bird or a falling leaf.
I love that image by implication, comparing the professor to a locked window.
Yeah.
How you can be illuminating, but there are some things I'm not going to open the window all the way and let you in. So, oh, that's wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. I would put for the student that did this, only I'm afraid, like, the student might be embarrassed.
Right. On occasion, I've held office hours in cafes in downtown Davis, the city that I'm reaching you from today. And I've had students come to me to visit me in office hours, and after we had, quotes, concluded, they would want to continue to chat about this, that, or the other. And it's harder to make those noises and those indications that they should leave when you're in a public place and anyone's allowed to grab a cup of coffee and sit down. So I've, but luckily I always have my laptop nearby. And, you know, I can always say, well, I need to send an email to the class list and continue working. so that it doesn't turn into a social hour.
See, that's what I need to get a laptop. I still write all my poems out by hand. I'm very old-fashioned in that way. I have to feel the lines. I don't know why that is, but I have to feel them. So I get these notebooks, and I actually decorate all the covers. I do this little decoupage thing because I like to have the notebook feel somehow like it has something to do with the poems I'm writing.
Right.
And then I just use that notebook till it's about to fall apart, and I write everything out by hand because I have to feel the lines and I have to feel the line breaks. And that's how they all start, is by hand, and then eventually I get them onto the typewriter, and then I'll play around with them. Well, I should say the computer. It's not a typewriter anymore, though I use mine as a glorified typewriter. But for me, that first sort of visceral connection on paper with me and the pen and the paper and feeling it is very important. I think I must be, like, very kinesthetic or something. I don't know, but I really have to feel it.
Well, it sounds like you're using multiple senses to get a sense of the line and when the line should end, what should be included. And I think it's probably easier to have a sense of that rhythm and working with rhythm when you're also using the rhythm and the spatiality, the changing in time of moving the pen across the paper.
Yeah, well, for me, and it's funny because I was I read the comments that Indigo Moore made about my poems, and I was so happy because he said something about my lines and my line breaks, and I was known as the line break queen at the University of Georgia.
Yeah.
Everybody came to me for advice about line breaks because I discovered for myself that line breaks, how you break the line and what you do with the line, can really take a poem that starts out seeming kind of mediocre, but if you learn to break the lines in a more interesting way, the poem comes alive. And that's one of the things, again, I try to do with my students is, like, look at all the possibilities of line and look at how line as the most important unit in some ways to me of a poem, how you can use that and how you can use it for double entendre and how you can use it for emphasis and how you can use it, you know, to play and pun and do all sorts of things. And I just I love playing with lines and line breaks, and I love the technical part of poetry. I'm so in love with you know, playing with technique and just everything. I love everything about poetry. I love the words. I love the line breaks. I love reading poetry. I just love everything about it. I mean, I just practically glow. I don't know if you can hear the glowing over the radio.
I can, and it makes me think your students are very lucky.
Yeah, and my students get kind of like, oh, Dr. Morphy just loves this stuff. And I do. I just adore it, and I just can't imagine anything better. And so for me, it's just such a wonderful expression of the human spirit and such a wonderful way to connect. I think Stanley Kunitz said that it's one human heart connecting with another human heart, something, I'm paraphrasing that badly. He's got this book, A Kind of Order, A Kind of Folly, and he talks about how that, you know, that's what has to happen. You have to have, like, these two human beings making this emotional connection.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think that part of that is through the rhythm, is through the idea of, you know, the line somehow or the other becoming part of you. And as you read them, you become, for an instant, that other person who wrote it.
Well, that's wonderful. Melissa, we'll have to cut it off there because we're at the end of this segment. But I so much enjoyed talking to you, and hearing you talk about line breaks makes me want to make sure to pick up a copy of your newly award-winning manuscript, Bluster.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks, Sacramento.
Absolutely, and we look forward to hosting you sometime. Certainly,
okay.
I know one place where you'll be able to get a good-sized crowd at a reading.
Oh, well, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Melissa Morphew, author of the prize-winning book, Bluster, joining me in conversation today on Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stick around. Chase McMichael is right around the corner.
if it were easy, everyone would do it. It takes a special person to join the National MS Society's Bike Tours to Fight MS. If you like a challenge and want to have some fun for a good cause, call 1-800-FIGHT-MS.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This is Dr. Andy with an important message from Maida Subaru. Maida Subaru reminds you that the children are back to school. Beware, while headed to and from school, they're often distracted by friends and aren't always thinking about traffic hazards. So drive carefully, watch out for them, for they may not be watching out for you. Brought to you by Maida Subaru at 2410 Auburn Boulevard in Sacramento. For further information about Maida Subaru, you can reach them at MaidaSubaru.com or at 916-486-8000. They care about our children's safety and wish all kids a safe school year. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, thanking you for tuning in to your local community radio station and reminding you that, as so many people do, you can hear us at any time at kdvs.org. I'm thrilled to have Chase McMichael here on the program. Chase McMichael has over 15 years of senior-level product development and management experience in consumer messaging and marketing technologies, including social media, advertising software, and collaboration. While at Unbound, he created the world's largest social marketing database, receiving the Viral Hall of Fame from Award Marketing Sherpa in 2008, and many blog and news inclusions in the field of social intelligence. While at the Oracle Corporation, Chase McMichael managed the real-time collaboration and instant messaging service in Oracle 10G. And while working for Sprint, he created the Enhanced Messaging Service, or EMS, and launched Instant Messaging Services. He's had many other positions. He's the inventor or co-inventor of 13 U.S. patents, and his specialties include social intelligence, affinity and viral database marketing, and social ad targeting programs. And we're going to be talking about how some of these topics could come in handy for instance, small businesses. Chase McMichael, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hey, thanks, Andy, for having me on. That was when I hear you read out my bio, it's was a mouthful, but it's exciting to be on your show.
Well, I'm thankful to have you here, and I'd also like to point out something that I mentioned at the top of the hour, and that is that you and I are both participating in something called Social Email Marketing in San Francisco on the 17th of September, which will integrate email marketing and social media. And it must be exciting for you after working with, say, individual clients, individual businesses, to go into a large conference room and talk to a great number of people you've never met before about topics that have been so important to you and where you've made so many important discoveries.
Absolutely, Andy. You know, one of the big things that's happening right now is that, you know, there's a huge number of businesses that are just embarking on social. And, you know, we're always hearing about all the big brands, but there's a lot of companies that are just starting to utilize Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
You know, MySpace, for instance, have been around for a long time. But really, you know, from a business perspective, you know, and a lot of people now know about Facebook. That really amplified everything, and people started seeing some amazing returns. You know, very small businesses, mom and pop shops, all the way up to major brands were actually creating more traffic back to their site than some of the keyword systems like Google. And so the balance of shift has changed where, you know, you're connecting with an audience that has passion about your product or your service. And now the consumer has voice versus you trying to compete with another person to buy a keyword. Now the consumer now has power like really never before.
Absolutely. And I think from a small business point of view and as a teacher and, I guess, poet's point of view, one exciting thing for me is that a new business person's creativity and insight and ingenuity can actually be worth more than, say, a very expensive buy of a keyword on Google, if there's that realization of how potential markets, people in those markets are spending their time. And especially in a university town like Davis, if you go into an internet cafe, you see Facebook popping up all over the place. And if you walk down the street, you see everyone on their smartphones. And you know that many of them are tweeting their friends or checking in on Foursquare or whatever the case may be. There's something very exciting going on, and people, as you're suggesting, are figuring out now how their creativity can help them participate and to get their messages out.
Absolutely. Content is king. It always has been. It's always, I think, the challenge is that, you know, someone creates a really cool blog post or some type of, you know, video, and it's, you know, all I need to do is get that to the right people. One of the things in the research that we're doing on and Vinograph is really understanding consumer connections. What are they connected to? What's cool about Twitter and Facebook and the like is when you like or connect to a brand, product, or service, Foursquare is a really neat technology as well, because now you're actually going to a physical location. There's a ton of metadata. And that information for a marketer is extremely important, because it's like the more relevant I can get with my audience, the more receptive they are, and the more contributions they will contribute. And that's the name of the game, is that I get a piece of content out there in someone's hands that finds it of value. And what Facebook did really, which was transformative, as well as Twitter, was the feed, you know. And we even say here at Infinigraph, we say, feed the feed. You know, you've got to get your information out where when someone clicks the like button or comments, that gets immediately broadcasted to all their friends. And that's the phenomenal part about, I think, what we call the social graph, you know, the connections of people, is that now that communication can go beyond you, beyond just your subscribers, where now it goes to that reach, that social reach that everybody, the coveted piece that everyone's looking for, is how do I get my message out to the broadest audience possible, but be as authentic as possible as well. And that's what I think social is doing for, you know, virtually anybody that gets online has that capability at their beck and call.
And so looking in your crystal ball, both in terms of the topics that you'll be talking about, Chase McMichael, when you speak at the social email marketing event in San Francisco on the 17th of September, and also what you imagine some of the other high-profile speakers will be talking about, what are some of the new themes, new ways of thinking about this that you think will be explored, revealed, or discussed at this day-long conference?
Oh, for sure. One of, I think, the big themes, you know, when I talk about, you know, looking in the crystal ball is, you know, the consumers are looking for discovery, intelligent discovery. You know, what's happened and what's exciting, and others will be talking about this as well, is, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this, crowdsourcing.
Right.
It's been around for a long time, but what's happened recently is the fact that we're no longer the Kevin Bacon 6 degrees of separation. The separation between people is becoming much less. And due to what's called social density, the increase of connections, increase of connections around brands, increase of connections around my friends. And what's happening is that as that continues to go forth and bifurcating across other social networks like Foursquare, Twitter, Facebook, you know, I'm getting these overlaps. My consumer, my community, and it could be for a brand or myself as an individual friend, they're crowdsourcing content all the time. So it's enabling me to have a human filter on scale out there saying, hey, this is hot. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about is, well, how do you do that when you have, let's say, 1 million or 50,000 followers? How do you determine what is the hot content? And then how do I package it and get it back out to my audience? Because if it's resonating with one micro community, most likely it's very on topic and relevant to another micro community. And that's what we want to create, this hyper discovery. We want to be able to create and enable people that have content to get it out there. And I'm sure you've went to blogs and saw a really neat article, and you saw maybe like 10 tweets or 50 tweets, maybe, you know, 20 shares. But this content should be going out to millions.
Right.
And that's the big opportunity I see, is that people are creating wonderful, amazing amount of content out there. It's being locked up, and we've got to bring these intelligent communities together, and that's that shortening of the degree of separation. Once that happens, then you create what we call these discovery zones. So brands, individuals now can start owning these discovery zones, because you've heard of the word curation, content curation. I get some content, I put some information around it. That is so hot right now. And a lot of bloggers, you know, they'll take other content, mash it together, and then push it out. And that's really an amazing theme, because it's creating information upon information. And it's almost like, you know, X squared. And the excitement and the big opportunity is that we're going to see big innovation on mobile devices. We're going to see huge innovation with, you know, portable desktop applications that will be, you know, location's hot today. But at the end of the day, it's going to be how successful companies are. They're going to harness that information flow and utilizing that to their advantage.
Absolutely. Well, if you're just joining us, Chase McMichael is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. He is the CEO of Infinigraph. And do you mind, Chase, if I tell people about your blogs? I found it fascinating reading.
Oh, no, please. Yeah, we should talk about them. They're, we try to keep, you know, less vendor pumped and more about, you know, what's going on in the space. But absolutely.
Well, it's blog.infinigraph.com. And I'm beginning to delve into this as someone who teaches at a university and has a good number of followers on Facebook. I'll only make friends with people I actually know, so that keeps me in the very high three digits. But of course, universities are where Facebook got started, because it kind of virtualizes the sort of connections that students are so excited to make. And it's been very interesting to see how, over the last 5 or 6 years, how we are all attending a sort of social networking university by participating in Facebook and Twitter, and getting to see virtual evidence of not only all the connections we're making, but also to see how our friends are spending our time and giving us those opportunities for, as you mentioned before, additional discoveries of how we also want to spend our time. So again, that blog is blog.infinigraph, infinigraph.com, and the author is Chase McMichael. Chase, we have to take a quick break for an important message, but when we return, I'm hoping that you'll share some parting thoughts with us at the end of this hour.
Absolutely.
All right, one moment. Everyone, I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. This is KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. If you're looking for services or programs for older adults, you might consider the great number of services provided by the California Department of Aging. Whether it's for yourself, a neighbor, or a loved one, you can get answers by calling 1-800-510-2020. You'll get information on local senior housing options, transportation, Meals on Wheels, legal services, and much more. These services are supported by the California Department of Aging and the Area 4 Agency on Aging, serving Sutter, Yuba, and Yolo counties. A public service message brought to you by KDVS. I'd also like to remind listeners that starting in about 2 hours, The great Sacramento poet Danny Romero will be reading his work. He was born and raised in Los Angeles, has had poetry and short fiction published in a great number of impressive journals, including Bilingual Review, Colorado Review, and the Patterson Literary Review. His work has appeared in books and anthologies, and he's the author of the novel Call 10. He'll be reading tonight at Bistro 33 in Davis at 226 F Street at 8 o'clock, and there will be an open mic afterwards. So, Chase McMichael, we are coming up on the end of the hour. I'm wondering if you have any closing bits of wisdom to share with listeners of this radio show.
Absolutely. One of the big things for if you are a small business out there is, you know, email is still an important facet of your company, you know, collecting emails, being able to put together mailers. You know, even if you're starting off small, Facebook and Twitter is, you know, almost a must-have at this stage of the game. And it's so simple. The tools out there, there's a lot of them for free. And, you know, building your community is a priceless thing. And, you know, with that, we'll carry your business forward.
Good advice. Chase McMichael, the CEO of Infinigraph, I look forward to meeting you in person on September 17th.
Thank you. I look forward to it as well. Bye-bye, Andy.
Take care. And I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon to KDVS. We just heard from Chase McMichael, who's the CEO of Infinigraph. If you want to find out more about his work, you can visit infinigraph.com. And I encourage you to check out his blog. It's very informative. I'd also like to thank Melissa Morphew, the professor of English at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas, who joined us to share with us a few poems and tell us about her award-winning manuscript, Bluster. It's just won the Sacramento Poetry Center Manuscript Award for the year 2010. My name is Dr. Andy. I thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon. Stick around for some great music, and I'll be back next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Bye-bye.